अस्मत् गुरुभ्यो नमः, अस्मत् परम गुरुभ्यो नमः, अस्मत् सर्व गुरुभ्यो नमः. द क्वेश्चन आस्ड लास्ट वीक वॉज दिस, इज शंकराचार्य जस्टिफाइबल, कैन हिज व्यूज बी जस्टिफाइड दैट द प्रोसेस इज नॉट इम्पॉर्टेंट और प्रोसेस इज प्रेटी मच इल्यूजरी एंड फाइनली वॉट यू गेट इज the result is the nitya mukta shuddha atma, that is the eternal ever existent ever released atman, pure atman, which is the result. So how can the process be completely denied and the result be upheld as valid and real, and the process to get to the result is invalid or pretty much unreal? Let's start from the very beginning here. There is definitely a sweet spot or a comfort zone for each person from each group. A Vishishta Dvaitin or a Dvaitin probably will not be comfortable with the view of Advaita, because that may sort of affect their process of bhakti or process of a realization of God or process of what their worship and daily duties they do. So they definitely, it may be difficult for them to accept. On the other hand, for a Advaitin, Dvaita and Vishtadvaita may be very difficult to accept, because they come from a different perspective, and they may immediately categorically say that, well, as long as these Dvaitins and Vishtadvaitins who have the sambandha or the association of ignorance and difference, they are always bound to think in the body sense, where they are thinking from a difference aspect, that is seer and the seen and objects around them, all these things occur to them naturally. So, well, we need to ignore this issue completely. So, well, that's natural for people. But let's take a very objective view of Shankara philosophy here, so that we just clinically examine without any bias what the issues are. In this particular verse which was described last time, I think there is Yasmin Sarvani Bhutani Atmaiva Bhut Vijanataha, this verse. Yes, the process has been negated in that from the Shankaracharya's perspective. But what did Shankaracharya say in the very beginning of the Ishavasya Upanishad? He separated, in any Upanishad for example, he separates out people into two different categories. That is Atmavit or the Jnananishtha or a very very advanced aspirant, and the rest are the normal level aspirants. So for the normal level aspirants, he definitely suggests Kurvanneveha Karmani, the second verse. He says he has to be doing all the actions all along, all life, and by doing dedicated actions to God and things like that, he will be released, and then eventually Krama Mukti, or eventually he will attain the Chitta Shuddhi or the purity of mind, and then he will be ready for Jnana Nishtha or the process of Jnana. And the first verse, Ishavasyamidam Sarvam Yatkincha Jagatyam Jagate, that was dedicated or addressed to the highest level aspirant. Now we need to understand, where is this highest level aspirant and lower level aspirant? It's not like, you know, you're sitting in a temple or in any kind of a place around casually talking about and say, somebody is teaching a philosophy lecture here, he should be a higher level aspirant. Oh, I am listening to this lecture, so I should be of a lower level aspirant. This is not what we're talking about. We're talking about somebody on the other end, like Shukamuni, who didn't even hear what his father was calling him. And Sarvabhuta Hridayam Munimanatosmi Yam Pravrajantam Anupetam Apeta Krityam. So Shukha was of the highest order of aspirant. So this is what is addressed in the first level. Why does Shukha have to get into all this mess? Shukha can directly visualize, and for him it's everything is God, and that's how he has visualized. Let us take for example another example. Vamadeva, Rishi Vamadeva is in the Upanishads. As you know, Shankaracharya wants to bring back all arguments or whatsoever to the basis of Shrutis or the Vedas only. even though he uses Vishnu Purana and other Puranas in support, but he takes Shruti as the main. There in the Shruti there is a story about this Vamadeva who was born or who was inside the mother's body, that is in mother's womb, and he immediately realized aham suryascha, aham manura bhavan suryascha, that means I became the Surya, I became the Manu, everything. He realized his identity with everything. So for such an aspirant, a different method is taught. That is, the process is basically negated. And for an aspirant of an ordinary person, the process is not negated, because it says, well, you have to go through. So in real sense, in Advaita, there are two different views. But most of the people who oppose Advaita are not paying attention to these two views. Even though, I'm not saying that somebody has to accept it, but we have a very objective view of Advaita. The second thing is, can Advaita or the oneness between God and everything else, can it be removed or completely ignored from the Upanishads? No, not at all. There are several statements which Shankaracharya keeps on harping in every Upanishads. For example, Aham Brahmasmi, Tattvam Asi, Sarvam Khalvidam Brahma. Sarvam Khalvidam Brahma, all this is Brahman. Tattvam Asi, you are that. Aham Brahmasmi, I am Brahman. And Sadeva Somya Idamagra Asitu Ekameva Advitiyam. Sat only existed in the very beginning. All this was Sat only. Ekameva, that one only, Advitiyam, without a second. So we have this problem of unity forever, and particularly Bahusyam. Hello. Yeah, Bahusyam. Bahusyam means I will become many. When Bahusyam Prajaye Eti Satapotapyata, that means when creation occurred, God will to become many. So what is the relation, what is the unity? And what is the relation between unity and many? This is a very, very fundamental problem of the Vedas. And if that means what, the Shrutis can be separated out into separate types. Abheda Shrutis, that which support oneness only. Bheda Shrutis, that which support that God and rest, or God, souls and matter are different. So there are several Bheda Shrutis. Bhokta, Bhogyam, Preritaram, Chamatva, Jushtaha Tataha, this is a Shweta Shvetara Upanishad. Bhokta, Bhogyam. Bhokta is the enjoyer. Bhogyam is the world which is being enjoyed. Preritara is the person who is a controller, evoker of all thoughts, basically he does that. He is the actor, he is the original person who puts everything together. Preritara means basically prerana means by his permission everything works like that. All these three are different according to Shweta Shvetara. Now we have Bheda Shrutis. So what happens is, there are several Western authors who have summarily rejected the whole Veda, saying that they are haphazard, brilliant thoughts which are unrelated, and just like there's no real sense we can make out of the Upanishads, but looks very cute, wonderful ideas. So some people have summarily rejected that we cannot make a unified theory or a unified ideology from the Vedas. That's a separate issue. The Vedantic schools always have thought that there is some kind of systematic perception of these things. If you look at from that perspective, you can say what Advaita has done is given prominence to Abheda Shrutis and rejected the rest of the Shrutis, or put them into a lower level by using the idea of two-level reality. But two-level reality, yes, it is sounds awful. How can there be two levels of reality? We can say that. But if you think about it, let's assume that everybody goes to moksha sometime. And there we are sitting there. One person may think that, oh, I'm alone in moksha, I'm just myself, that is, I'm just Atman. One person may get to a state where, no, I'm serving God, Sriman Narayana. One person may say that, oh, I'm in Goloka Vrindavana serving Radha Krishna and all the gopis and everything like that. Yes, but one question can be asked, what is the status of their relation to their past? Where they came from, whether they came from, you know, US or India or something, what kind of relations they had, what kind of ups and downs they had in life, they will never remember these things. So from an individualistic perspective, why can't we say that these things are unreal? For that person it is unreal, because once somebody has gone to moksha, nobody is going to remember all these things. From that perspective, the question of reality, unreality can be sort of explained from the Advaita view. I'm only viewing this objectively, not that, I'm just throwing some ideas at all of you to think from a objective perspective, that's all. Why? Because even among Advaitins, we have wonderful bhaktas. For example, the Sridhara Bhashya of Bhagavata, Sridharacharya is supposed to be an Advaitin. I don't know, one end it will be bhakti oriented, one end it will be, he is Advaitin. There are a lot of such complex phenomenon of people who are bhaktas. Madhusudana Saraswati is one among them, who sorts of accept Advaita, but probably is very much Advaitic writer. He is known to be an Advaitin. Like that Tyagaraj, I don't know about Tyagaraja for sure, and there are a number of Advaitic Acharyas, even in the lineage of the Advaitic Acharyas, who have been great Krishna Bhaktas. And even Shankaracharya's own writings on Narasimha and Bhajagovindam are not explicable, and they are hard. Outpourings of the heart, if you look at Lakshmi Narasimha Mamadehi Karavalambam Stotra, they are outpourings of the heart. So I know that some people have a lot of problems creating a perceived union among this two-level reality and living in such kind of ideology. For some people, it is not. Basically, Shankaracharya has raised the barrier high there, saying that somebody is so high there. After that point, am I supporting all these issues? I'm just trying to be non-partisan, that's all here. Hope this is clear, and I want your views on it. Let me just check. Oh, I should be in Q&A mode now. One second. Let me put this on conversation for a few minutes and get back to the other mode. I'm sorry I didn't put it on the... Okay. Any views? Just want to get some views from you also. Yes? Yes? Okay, let me tell you what this is. The question, let me repeat the question for the sake of recording here. Keshavan asked, what do you mean by some Advaitins who are bhaktas? Are they smartas? What I heard recently was, there is a person called Bodhendra Saraswati, Saraswati in the Kanchi Kamakoti Pita line, about, you know, few hundred years ago or something like that. He was supposed to be a person who brought Srimad Bhagavatam to the south and all. He was supposed to be constantly in the Ramanama mode, being a Nama Upasaka, and then being a great Bhakta. Like that, there are several. Sadashiva Brahmendra is another person who was a great Bhakta. At the same time, an Advaitic Acharya, in the sense that he was the head of a Kanchi Kamakoti Pita Acharya, Pita. So, there are some people who have been able to bridge the gap or make real sense or make the Advaitic view as some kind of a viable doctrine, right? But for some people, it's totally unacceptable. So what we are trying to say is, from the Shankaracharya's view, whether is he really completely negating the process to get to the final, like how the snake disappears into the rope, and the snake being the world, for the intelligent, the snake disappears just like that, vaporizes, and then right behind it you see the rope. So the process is sort of negated. Well, all we have to say is we have to take it from two perspectives. One is for the intelligent, one is for the non-intelligent. That's all is my view. Okay.
Okay.
I didn't quite understand your question. Let me repeat the question just for the sake. So, the question here, as I understand right now, is that yes, the bhakti is all compatible with the way some of the Advaitins deal with it. So it is compatible. But they cannot explain away, if they assume that they are Jivan Muktas, then I didn't understand after that point. What does happen if they assume? Correct.
Then if they accept that, then at that point, if they're accepted Jivan Mukti, at that point there cannot be any upasana or any brahmana or any distinction between themselves and the deity or whatever.
Yeah. Okay, the question here is, if they accept that they are videha muktas, or they are muktas right here in this life, then they cannot have any kind of upasana beyond that point, because Kaivalya is a separate lone existence. So there is no question of Ramnama at that point, or any kind of upasana or meditation at that point. This is how I understand the question. Am I right?
Right.
Okay. See, the way what Advaitin would say to this is this. All the process of upasana is okay. The upasana, many other people may say it is Kaivalya or Videha Mukti, but for them, there is only one, and that is the final, and that is Brahman. And people may disagree, but their view is that Brahman is not just a Jiva or a soul. Again, your question seems to look at this point, this from a Dvaitic point of view, because when he say Videha Mukti, he basically says that, oh, I have a small remnant of a problem here, which is the Deha is attached to me. That's it. And even they say Deha is an adjunct or the Upadhi there. The Deha goes away, that he is one with the only one, which is not a Jiva for him. For him, it is only the Brahman or the one eternal one only. So, what happened? So then, where is this upasana or Ramnam Sankirtana? Is before he gets that the state of moksha. For his moksha, he becomes one with the final. Fine, but before getting there, he has to pass through Ramanama, etc. So this is the Kramamukti. Kramamukti means you are having upasana. For him, the upasana leads to realization. So upasana is necessary as long as this person is at a lower level of maturity in the process of realization. So Ram Nama is okay till you get there. From after that point, there is no question of Ram Nama because he's already Mukta. When he is Mukta, the only difference, very clear difference is, the Dvaitin says we enjoy the, we can never be equal to that God, and that God has to support us even there in moksha. And then we enjoy the company, a constant, communion, constant interaction with God there. Okay, this kind of activity, this kind of moksha is not defined in Advaita. In Advaita, the Jnana, Jnaya, and you know very well, Jnana, Jnaya, and Jnatri, everything becomes one. And the question of knowing or question of anything becomes not there. So, there is a difference at the moksha stage. Okay. Correct.
Right.
Yeah.
Even after Chitrashuddhi, even during this Ramanama, and even after the Chitrashuddhi is achieved, till he achieves Kaivalya or the oneness with Brahman, bhakti is interwoven. There is no separation. I think the bhakti is there throughout. Till he, that light switches on, that he is one with Brahman, and then the feeling of Sarvatma Bhava.
Correct. Correct. So the thing is, you are not disagreeing with me, are you?
Yes, I am not disagreeing at all. I am saying that the Shankaracharya, even in his later years, after achieving the Kaivalya, he wrote hymns on Lakshmi Narasimha and so many Bhaja Govindam and so many things.
Okay. So, okay, let me...
Is it easier to show that for people to guide, that they should follow the path of bhakti as well?
Okay. Let me summarize what you say for the sake of record here, okay? Shyamsundar says Shankaracharya probably wrote the Narasimha shlokas and all after attaining Jivan Mukti, and so even after attaining Jivan Mukti, one can always continue in the path of moksha, its process and things like that, right? Okay. Oh yeah. See, the thing is, what I want to answer is, you already answered it. The Jivan. These are controversial points. The Jivan Mukti as accepted by Advaita is that even though a person is Jivan Mukta, he can do continue activity only for the purpose of Loka Sangraha. That means to help the world around, to uplift the world around, or to be an example for the world around. The question here comes as whether Shankaracharya wrote these shlokas after Jivan Mukti, right? The question becomes difficult here because it's controversial. The Advaita, the Vishishta Advaita and Dvaitins do not accept such a concept of Jivan Mukti, because for them, you either are living or you either are Mukta. When you are a Mukta, you are not in this body, and you are completely in the state of final Samam Bonam. So the Jivan Mukti as a you write here Atra Brahma Samashrute, and even right here you get Jivan Mukti. Shankaracharya proves it from his perspective, from the other Upanishads like Atra Brahma Samashrute and other things like that. So there is a controversy regarding the understanding of Jivan Mukti state. But for you are right that for the purpose of helping others, the Jivan Mukti state is explained in the Advaita like that. That is correct. But what is theoretically more accurate for the purpose of technicality is that once a person attains moksha, he does not have to do sadhana or pathway. He does not have to do anything to attain that. Because that becomes theoretically wrong to say that. In terms of technicality, what you should say, a person, whether the Jivan Mukta Mukti concept is acceptable to others or not, but Advaiti's view of Jivan Mukti, he does exist, and after that, whatever he does for the sake of the good of the public. And that's what I can say. Okay. Any other questions? Any other questions here? So that we'll finish this portion and then we'll get to the next portion.
I just want to, can you maybe quickly explain just why it is that
See, the thing is, in Advaita, what happens is, that's a very good question. Let me repeat the question for sake of record. If in Advaita, when one person achieves moksha, why does not everybody else also achieve moksha at the same time? Why is this? Okay. Again, this is a gray area. Their view would be very clear. Their view is, look, there is multiplicity on one hand, and there is unity on the other hand. When you say, who is the person who attains moksha? There are multiples, see, because of avidya, all this universe is avidya only, right? Avidya means ignorance. With I existing, I am talking, all this, from a Advaitic perspective, let us take from an Advaitic perspective. Let me put this on one way mode here. 1 second.
Q&A mode is on. Participants may now unmute themselves. Presentation mode is on. Only organizers can be heard.
I will put it on presentation mode for some time and continue with this. In Advaita, when we say one person attains moksha, who is that person who attains moksha? That there is nobody who is attains moksha. I am not bound. How can I get moksha is the question Shankaracharya asks in the Nirvana Shataka. The whole process of I am bound is ignorance. It's unreal. In moksha, what you have to see is, you know, I will say moksha is what? I am associated with, who is the I? I is the ego only. That means the combination of the inner organ, which we call antahkarana, or the mind, ego combination, or something like that, right? Jiva is that only. And when that breaks away, the original Atman exists. So moksha is the status of original Atman who does not need any, who is not bound to start with. The very fact that that we are bound is an ignorance. So for their for Advaitic perspective, then we can ask, what about the other people who say that who are bound? Oh, there are other people who, due to ignorance, who are bound. But what is that ignorance? Their very existence, their very suffering, or very activity in this universe is ignorance. When you have two level reality, you can explain away on the one level reality, multiplicity, very easily. On the other level, that other Atman is never bound. That is why it is two level reality. Atman was never bound to get moksha. Hope I am clear. It's a complex issue.
Conversation mode is on. Everyone can now be heard.
So, is that clear or? Okay. Any other question? Okay, what we do is we now go to the next topic. I'm just going to save this file separately. The next topic is the concept of Sharira Shariri Bhava in Vishishtadvaita. There was a second question. Let me stop for a minute and I'll be on the line. I'll just change the file here. 1 second.